My name is Bill Durden. I'm president of Dickinson College. Let me welcome everyone here from across the country to this very important meeting. I am delighted this is happening. It's about time. It's really wonderful to see all the young people here and others getting together to talk about this critical topic. I feel very comfortable in this environment, actually. Some people here know a little bit about my background, but I grew up in farm country. I was a 4-H'er for 11 years. I grew a lot of vegetables. I sold vegetables. I had a lot of chickens. I had an egg root for many, many years. And I put myself through college, in large part because of the proceeds on all of that after well over a decade of engagement as a kid. And in addition, there's a cross here, too. When I was growing up, my father was a professional cook. And so the intersection of farm and cooking just comes the way I was brought up. And it was always the attempt, of course, the chickens were all over the place and the ducks were all over the place. And we tried to do a lot, obviously, as much as we could without pesticides. So this has been a strain for a long time in this country. And it's wonderful to see our students, the other students here in your institutions, turning in this direction. Also, let me congratulate Jen and Matt for all they do for Dickinson and all they've done here with all their colleagues. Thank you very much. Now, just a little bit about Dickinson College that relates to what you're doing. It's good to know the context, always the historical context. This is a very old college. It's the 16th oldest in the United States. It was founded by a signer of the Declaration of Independence, Dr. Benjamin Rush. And also, it was founded 5 days after the signing of the Treaty of Paris, thus the first college in the country after the formal ending of the American Revolution. But our founder intended from the start in a plan for Dickinson College that agriculture be a subject of study. It was in the plan. It's very important, but it was ignored. It was ignored by people who were still living in the 18th century, and while he was complex and while he had its faults, he was living way in the future. He was against slavery. He was abolitionist, head of the first society in the United States. He was for the substantive education of women. He was for the humane treatment of the mentally challenged. He was a physician. In addition, depending on your political persuasion, he was against the death penalty. All of this out of the 18th century. But what is very interesting is he took an interest in the environment and sustainability. He was concerned about the state of the air in this town in the 18th century. And we are here on this site because he thought the air across the town was bad. Well, that's where the U.S. Army is right now, and we're here. Secondly, he had a long correspondence with Thomas Jefferson, one of our early first funders here, private funders, about seeds, about plants, also a long letter to Jefferson about how to make maple syrup. All of this was part of the original impulse of this institution. So again, we too come at this naturally and with history behind us. Now, it's my great pleasure this evening to introduce your speaker. Julia Barton is a 2005 graduate of Dickinson College and an urban homesteader with her partner, Patrick Turner, and cat. Purslane, is that correct? Indeed. Who is not here tonight, had previous engagements. But what I want to do is my wife and I know Julia well, and so this is a delight to be able to introduce her. And actually, Julia was in my wife's class. I want to weave into my comments much of the commentary that my wife, Elka, wrote about Julia at a certain point and recommendations as she's gone through her career after Dickinson. So I'll mix our comments together. Julia has been and remains an idealist, simultaneously a pragmatist, working concretely to improve the environment, During her time at Dickinson, she double majored in German and environmental science. Her innate ability with language, fine-tuned analysis of literature, and superior writing skills enabled her to excel as one of the finest students in the field of German. This, along with her avid interest in the environment, allowed her to work in a global setting. While in Bremen, Germany, during her junior year abroad, she herself, without assistance, pursued an internship in the Bund, or the Union for the Protection of the Environment and Nature of Germany. In that capacity, she researched the state of electrical production in Bremen, then analyzed each renewable energy option, and evaluated its compatibility with Bremen's infrastructure and natural resources. When Julia returned from Germany, she immediately began work in Dickinson's organic student garden. There, she began to develop a vision for the community. That is, she did not simply work within the confines of the garden, but learned the ramifications of all that occurred there and what it influenced. Compounding the knowledge she was acquiring as an environmental science major, she learned concretely about sustainable growth, harvesting food, and waste disposal. As she said, she was reminded daily of the cycle of life and the fragile balance of organisms. She felt compelled to work to preserve natural resources for the goal of a more sustainable society. Julia continued her research and applied what she learned at Open Sky Farm in Pennsylvania. There, she worked with Jen, who, of course, now runs Dickinson's 130-acre organic farm and teaches at the college. She also began her career as a teacher, instructing environmental education to elementary school students. She continued to do this with challenged adults upon graduation from Dickinson. We visit her at Hope Spring Farms, where she embarked on this program. This was essentially a barren piece of land. Julia developed the garden from scratch, took proper care of a large number of animals, not always ruly animals, as well as teaching daily. Julia completed her MS in rural sociology in 2010, during which she focused on agricultural economic development at the rural-urban interface, and collaborated with fellow students to found the Ohio State University Student Farm, which Patrick manages. She has recently begun an interdisciplinary PhD program in environmental sciences, which supports her work with Somali refugee women in urban agriculture and empowerment, in an urban agriculture and empowerment project. Through a National Science Foundation grant, Julia teaches science in a rural public school. Julia's fourth grade students recently advocated the creation of a school garden when they became dissatisfied with the vegetable options provided in school breakfast and lunch. Now that's great activism. Garden plans are underway. It is my honor to introduce you to Julia Barton. Julia?
It's always nice to come home, I guess. Can everyone hear me? I'm a little bit shorter. Down. How's that? Okay? Thank you. Wow, it really is. It's great to be back in the hub, or the hubby, as Patrick has been calling the Holland Union building all day. And it's great to enjoy a meal with you all. I certainly enjoyed the time on the farm today. It was really inspiring to see all the good work that's going on here. My purpose tonight is not just to welcome you again to my alma mater, but also to share with you something about my experiences here at Dickinson College, and then my experiences after leaving Dickinson College, and how the work that was done here to support me as a student enabled me to then go on to do some of the things that I've enjoyed doing in the past several years. I wanted to just test out our clicker here. There we go. So I was nosing around on the Dickinson College website recently, and I found this quote. It says that Dickinson teaches students to embrace new ways of thinking, solve problems creatively, and address important social issues purposefully. And I think a lot of liberal arts colleges share these sort of goals. I think you can probably think about the institutions that you work for and maybe where you are a student, that you might have similar goals to this. We're talking about creating well-rounded scholars, people who can think and read, analyze information, speak foreign languages. At Dickinson, that's of particular importance. Students are expected to come out of here being able to articulate themselves in more than one language and be able to understand the culture of the communities where those languages are spoken, as well as being able to explore diverse areas of study. I think one of the coolest things about liberal arts, the philosophy behind liberal arts education, is that you have to go outside your comfort zone. You're required to do so. And I was lucky as a student here in that this science class that was I was required to take led me to double major in the environmental sciences. So I think we know that these students can read and write and think and speak foreign languages and operate within different cultures, but what can they do when they leave here? And I think this is where Dickinson, at least in my experience, has an edge. Dickinson has a really neat philosophy that I think some people might call place-based education. These were pictures from when I was a student here. I have a little pointer. Some of you might recognize Julie Vasteen, who I think now directs the Alarm program here, which is a water monitoring program, community water monitoring program. And Professor Mike Hyman, who's seen here on top of a landfill with some students. We also have a visit to Centralia, Pennsylvania, which has an underground mine fire that's been going on for several years. And I think it's, you know, these are students in the top left here that are getting ready to go down into a coal mine. So I think in at least in the ES major at OSU, at Dickinson College, but also in other majors, because they were encouraged to go outside of their comfort zone, students were exposed to lots of on-the-ground experiences, which I think plays into this concept of place-based education. I did a little reading on place-based education in preparation for this talk, and I sort of created this short outline of what place-based education means. What I found is that people say it has to do with experiential learning in or about local or regional, natural and social settings. It also has to do with interdisciplinary and cross-cultural learning, which here at Dickinson is almost required. You have to go somewhere. I think, 80-some percent of the students here study abroad for at least a semester. Also, service learning, I think, is a big component of this place-based educational model. And the promotion of sustainability, which I can't even say how excited I am to see how central sustainability has become to at least the philosophy of this campus. And I have to say, even when I was a student here several years ago, there were lots of opportunities to get involved in these sort of place-based educational contexts, not just in the classroom, but also through extracurriculars off campus. There was a treehouse do we have any treehouse folks in here right now? Imagine. Yeah, there's several of them. Great. Yeah, the treehouse is an awesome place, at least I found to be an awesome place to live in an intentional community setting with other people that shared values of sustainable living. Also, other groups like Students for Social Action was a group that was started when I was a student here by some friends of mine that were also involved with the Student Garden, working on social issues. I remember at the time one of the major projects was fair trade coffee on campus that was achieved by that group. Also, cultural and religious organizations abound, and if you're interested in gender studies, you know, there's a women's center on campus. The Alliance for Aquatic Resource Monitoring, that's the group I mentioned before. I was never a part of that group as a student here, but I always admired the students who were. Do we have any alarm students in the room? I don't know. I know you've got to be. Oh, there's some in the back. Yeah, this group engages the community by going out and teaching people how to monitor their own streams in their own communities. So empowering community members to be able to monitor their own water. And finally, this brings me to the group which I hold near and dear to my heart called CISA, or Students Interested in Sustainable Agriculture. This group was started several years before I was at Dickinson by the group of students that started the Student Garden. And yes, it was a garden at that time. It was just up the road here and much smaller than the amazing farm that we visited today. But through this garden, and I talked to many people today who are like, oh, we don't have a farm, we just have a garden. And I think any experience where students are able to engage in these types of activities are really important. These were a few of the nuggets, I guess, of goodness that we were exposed to as students at the at the Student Garden here at Dickinson. Community organizing. When I was a student here, we organized a campus composting system, which you can see was very high tech. We had a rainbow-colored barrel, and students brought their trays in the caf, which is just across the way here in the cafeteria, brought their trays and then separated out those items that were compostable. We had a lot of signage. I'm pretty sure I spelled something incorrectly on the signage. I remember being really embarrassed about that at the time, but I took a lot of heat for that. But the students had to learn which things were compostable and which weren't. We also ended up with a lot of silverware and other non-compostable items. So I think the new pulping system that Dickinson has employed has improved that. But it was a good experience to learn how to get a message out to a community and then try to sort of derive some action from that message. Also, we did a lot of community outreach work, which it sounds like the students involved in the farm still are doing. We worked closely with Project Share, which is an emergency food provider, food bank in town, which was started by another Dickinson alumni. We got to do gleaning on local farms and see their operations. I remember seeing a packing house full of like 30 Latino workers and sort of seeing what that looks like. And then we also did some food deliveries in the community, which was kind of sensitizing to realize that there are people right here in Carlisle that are in need of emergency food provisioning. We also had great mentor-mentee relationships in the Student Garden. Jen and Matt, but Jen at the time was our Student Garden manager, leader, goddess, whatever title you choose. And she was great at building partnerships, as she continues to be. So we had mentors. We had the Pennsylvania Association of Sustainable Agriculture had potlucks at our farm, at our garden, which I hear they still have on the farm. We were also able to attend their conferences and were supported by the ES department to do so financially. We also had sort of the value of learning from them about different forms of certification. I remember writing a paper for an ES course where I looked at different forms of certification and then sort of weighed them. And we actually at the time, I heard the farm has a Food Alliance certification currently, which is really inspiring, as well as an organic certification. So not just looking at the production style, but also the relationships with the people on the farm. At the time, we chose to go with naturally grown certified and had a third-party mentor farmer who then came to our farm and sort of walked us through what that process looked like and what we needed to be doing. So I think further, these some of the skills that we learn on the farm are our life skills and leadership skills. We learn how to do things that are just good to know for your whole life. We learn how to grow food. You know, there's nothing like eating your own tomatoes that you grew. So whether you're farming or not, having a pot if you live in an apartment or having a garden full of your own tomatoes, I think is really empowering. We also learn how to compost and how to use soil, build soil and use that soil. And then we learn how to do small construction projects. And I just think that's really important. I don't think we think about that maybe every day in the liberal arts educational setting, but figuring out how to actually build something, not in theory, not hypothetically, but nuts and bolts and hammers and nails, sort of how do we actually put this structure together? We also gained leadership skills through things like we saw Dickinson students doing today, which I think they did an excellent job of telling people about what's going on the farm, leading tours, and I'm sure they also teach student volunteers who come out. You know, those who work out there on a regular basis have to teach people who are visiting. So these sorts of skills. I realize that these experiences help me not just to raise vegetables and worms. At the time, worms were our livestock at the Student Garden, so we can see where we've come from there. But also, we learned sort of that we were raising more than just that. And I would argue that on the Student Garden, we raised citizen scholars. The students in these pictures have gone on from their experience at Dickinson to do great things. And just a few examples here. We have, this is Jack Seitz down in the corner. Jack was a Fulbright scholar in Kazakhstan and has then come home. He came home to Appalachia and worked in agriculture there on a reclaimed mine site doing community agriculture. He's now pursuing a master's degree in Indiana in East Asian studies. Mary Oldham, who's here, I think she's planting onions right here. Mary was another ES major who was then a Peace Corps volunteer in Honduras for a few years, after which she worked at USAID there. And in her work at USAID, discovered that she feels she needs to have, she needs to be able to speak with economists in order to make a difference, she thinks, in agriculture and food systems. So she's since gone back to school at WVU to earn a degree in agricultural economics. And on a previous slide, Logan, who was another, he was composting a couple slides ago, he taught preschool in Ecuador for a while and then came home and got a degree from UC Berkeley, a master's in political science, and is now seeking a PhD at UC Santa Cruz. Lisa here with the latter. I don't know where Lisa is, but last I heard she was traveling in Central America, and no doubt, whatever Lisa puts her mind to, it's going to be something amazing. I think, so this solid foundation with these people, both peers and mentors, led me into the world of figuring out how to market my own liberal arts education while attempting to follow my passions. And though I couldn't necessarily articulate them at the time, I think I realized what I was really interested in was sustainable agriculture, community development, and education. And I was able to parlay my skills that I learned at Dickinson and through the support of my mentors here. I had two really strong advisors, one in German and one in environmental science, plus a slew of other folks who I felt were behind me anytime I needed them. And I was able to go on to farm both in a rural and an urban setting. The rural farming program, you can see a picture here with the goats, was a real challenge because I was working for the first time with people with disabilities, adults with disabilities. That was a whole new skill set that I had to build. And also working with livestock. It's not something I didn't have a farm with, you know, cattle and goats and sheep, or sheep and chickens, broilers. So I had to learn how to do that sort of from scratch. Luckily, at that time, I was also apprenticing with Jen and Matt on their farm, so I had a lot of support that way. I feel like you obtained sheep at about the same time, so we were all reading together how to raise sheep, learning together. I then took this sort of rural ag experience and was able to parlay it to an urban environment. I went home to Cleveland, Ohio, and worked for OSU Extension there in urban agriculture. Now, urban ag, is anybody here in an urban environment trying to grow food in the city? Yeah, we've got a few city farmers in the room. It's just a whole different ballgame. And I realized quickly that a lot of things that are a non-issue in a rural environment quickly become an issue in an urban environment because we've just got so many more people in a small space. So I realized that my liberal arts education was really important in that environment. I had to be able to meet with an urban farmer earlier in the day and talk about the chickens or the compost management or the rat problem. And then I needed to be able to go to City Hall and talk to a council person or present before the Planning Commission and explain why this agricultural zoning district was important or explain why a chicken coop could fit into this historical district. Also, working there with the Cleveland Cuyahoga County Food Policy Coalition, I realized how important it continued to be to have people in multiple different disciplines working together on food system issues. These sorts of questions and these sorts of ideas led me back to graduate school where I studied rural sociology and was exposed to different models of thinking about science and the scientific method. This is my new favorite scientific method model. It's out of UC Berkeley's School of Paleontology, and I've been using it in teaching recently, and I've been using it also for my own work. These kinds of non-linear models of the scientific method, I think, mirrored what I already knew of the scientific method from undergraduate research experiences at Dickinson. You can see there's a lot of accountability in this model. You start with the community, and you have to give feedback to the community, and you have to take their input into account. You also have some time at the top there to do some exploration and discovery. You know, don't just jump into a project that you thought up in your bathroom, right? I think a lot of graduate student researchers, unfortunately, feel like they've got to get going as soon as they get to school. And, you know, don't take time to sort of think about what you're doing and talk to the people who are maybe already living in the community that you'd like to work in. So these sorts of models led me to develop some of my own models and testing them in my own research that was related to food systems and community development. And the data from my master's research supported my experience that I had at the Student Garden, subsequent work in rural and urban agricultural settings, I had this feeling that that there was this underlying thing that was supporting the good work that I was seeing being done. So I think we can all see, you know, I talked to a few people today that say, oh, well, at our school, you know, there just isn't the kind of support that there is for this sort of work. And I started thinking about this idea of social infrastructure and reading about it. And I chose to measure it in my study using leadership, diversity of input, and good communication or good flow of information between the parties involved. And the data that I found in this, it was a national data set that a professor I worked with had done, sent out to a bunch of agricultural folks a year prior. I saw these patterns that were showing that there was something to this idea of this agricultural social infrastructure that then leads to the actual development of food system work and food system economic development, which I think at this time when everybody, every time you turn on the news or talk to somebody, you hear about jobs, you know, the need for jobs. So I think we have to maybe start with the social infrastructure, which will hopefully lead us to some economic development. But doing that, creating agricultural development, is a lot harder to do than it looks in this model, right? Here it looks very tidy. And it takes a lot more time than that and a lot more energy than that. So partially because of that knowledge, knowing sort of the joy that you get from actually doing something, partially because of that and partially because of just a need to be in the dirt, I worked with some other students at OSU to start the OSU Student Farm. I guess I wanted students at Ohio State, which is sort of very different from Dickinson. There are 50,000 undergraduates there, and it's just a huge, huge university. With a land grant history, so a different sort of agricultural history than here. So we worked together to start this farm. The farm is a partnership with Metro Early College High School. So we have a lot of good energy brought to the farm from high school students in addition to other folks in the community. But I think their work, learning to grow food in the field, but then also learning to form a farmer's market, calling vendors, sending out letters to request vendors, and putting together a balanced market and running it set up to tear down has been really important. We also attempted to sort of build the social infrastructure and seek broad input into the farm. We have a group of adults with disabilities that come out, and this was another idea that I got while I was at Dickinson. We had a group that used to come out to the student garden and manage a plot, which I just thought was a really good way to, for those of you that have worked with adults with disabilities or people with disabilities, you might know that one of the challenges is that people are so isolated. So this was a good way to have people out in the community digging in the dirt together. Also, we had different challenges. As I said before, I heard some of you today saying a lack of institutional support was something that you were noting at your different institutions. While OSU has this long history of agricultural engagement, it's an agriculture of a certain type, and it's now being pushed from the student body to learn to grow organically and sustainably in a slightly different direction than it maybe had been growing in the past. Luckily, the students are on board, and a small group of staff and professors have done a great job of integrating sort of the work of the farm into the classroom, which I think is something else that there's a lot of opportunity for, and it sounds like at least here, there are a lot of classes taking advantage of the farm. You know, students here are planning crop rotations. They're learning about pest and disease management. Here you see a tomato hornworm, which would only be a better picture if that hornworm were covered in parasitic wasps, right? But, you know, we also learn about waste management. There's a dairy, a working dairy on the OSU farm, and we have a biodigester there that some ag engineers are working with, so we receive some of the effluent from that for our work. Also just composting waste, you know, trying to do a composting program like we did here with a campus of 50,000 students is just, it's just a really challenging endeavor. So aside from classrooms at OSU, I've also had some opportunity to work in some other classrooms recently, and this is Mount Eaton Elementary School, which is a rural public school in sort of northeastern Ohio. I've come to be in this school through a watershed grant through the National Science Foundation, which is working to get graduate student researchers into K-12 classrooms. And my students took the classroom into the schoolyard, as you heard earlier, because they felt like there just weren't enough vegetables in their school breakfast and lunch. So we set to work, and tying these lessons in the garden to the Ohio academic standards with a place-based sort of framework was just very simple to do. It was made even easier because the fourth grade standards for Ohio in social studies focus exclusively on Ohio's natural resources and its landforms and its soils. So there's just a lot of good ways to tie this information to the curriculum. Once again, my experience as a Dickinson student garden helped me in this endeavor because we used to do outreach programs for the local elementary schools here, and I remember specifically doing an outreach program with, I think they were second or third graders, on composting. So you can see that one of the very first things we put in was a pallet compost bin. You can see Karen up there working with the compost. She's trying to get something in there with her rake. And boy, can these students work. I joke with the student farmers at OSU that if I had my kids, my fourth graders out here, the job would be done so much faster than what it's taking these college students to get it done. They just have a tremendous work ethic and a tremendous excitement for the work that they're doing. They also take a lot of pride in their work. And I think pride is an easy thing to foster when students feel like they have ownership in a learning experience. And they also, these students especially, have a strong tie to their community. Many of them, 3/4 of my students are Amish. And so community values are really ingrained in them. And if they understand that we're growing food for our school, you know, that this is going to go to our school's lunches, they feel really positively about that and feel really engaged in the project. They were also enthusiastic learners when we started to tie the school, the agriculture that we were doing at the school, to the watershed and talking about how agricultural endeavors on the land impact the watershed. So we started with a rain barrel and a rain gauge because they study weather in the fourth grade, and they built it. You might notice their very nice funnel up there on the left. It's duct taped together. We ran out of funnel material. But then we took the watershed and took it to another level by doing a stream study. So students went into the stream and collected all sorts of bugs, quote, bugs, and plant material and things. And then we brought them back into the classroom and tried to analyze the health of the stream based on the macroinvertebrates we found there. When I was a student at Dickinson, I had the opportunity to TA with Professor Wilderman, who I'm sure some of you have had the opportunity to work with. And boy, did I wish I had her with me when I was starting to teach this macroinvertebrate lesson, because she was the first director of the Alliance for Water Monitoring, the ALARM. I'm saying that wrong. Help me out. Alliance for Water Monitoring program. And she knows this stuff like the back of her hand. So I really wished I had had her with me for that. But the students really, they engaged in the process and even figured out that they could photograph through the microscope. This is one of their pieces of artwork, whatever they were looking at. Aside from these sort of activities and working in the OSU farm and with the students in Mount Eaton, I also try to be a scientist in my own right. And I've had the pleasure of working with the Somali refugee community in Columbus. We have about 50,000 also. Same number of students at OSU, about 50,000 Somali refugees in Columbus. Many of you, I'm sure, are aware of the situation in Somalia. It's been a civil war there for over a decade. And many of these people have come to the States in various areas. We just happen to be a hub. I got to volunteer with these refugee women in their community garden initially, and then I started teaching ESOL with them and just fell in love with the community. So my dissertation plans changed and became focused on this community. In this research, I'm trying to employ a participatory action research model, which means that members of the community are guiding the research. It's rooted in their priorities and what they see as needs. And then I offer my skills as a researcher to say, you know, these are the skills that I have that could go about answering these questions. And we sort of meet in the middle. It turned out that the first I thought that these women would want to work on their garden, right? Because this is where they spend so much of their time. It turned out that their first priority was, in fact, safety and security in their neighborhood. They live in a very rough neighborhood, and many of them are female heads of household, single female heads of household, because many of their husbands work in the meatpacking industry in Kentucky. So it's woman head of household with their children, usually a large family of children. So safety was of utmost concern. So for about the past year and a half, we've been working on a women's self-defense and empowerment project there, which has been coming along slowly but surely. This will eventually, hopefully, intersect into a sustainability analysis of the garden using an emergy analysis concept, so like an embodied energy analysis, as well as some sort of agricultural research project, which will be determined by the women themselves. Another interesting part of this project is that I feel I was well prepared for here at Dickinson has to do with communication. These are two of our garden leaders up here with the forsythia behind them, and Asli Hubi, one of the garden leaders who's probably our best, most experienced grower, doesn't speak a word of English. And I, until recently, didn't speak a word of Somali, so I found a Somali course at Ohio State and began studying. So by learning their language, I'm learning not just the words and the sounds to make and the ways to move my mouth, which are quite challenging, frankly. Somali is no cakewalk after German, which wasn't a cakewalk at the time either, but it definitely teaches me also a lot about their culture and their religion and about my own culture and religion and food as I'm doing it. So it's kind of a good way of taking sort of language experience and building upon it. It's interesting how timely this work seems to be. Maybe some of you read the Times. I don't know. You might have seen this picture last Sunday in the New York Times. This was an article called When the Uprooted Put Down Roots, and it focuses on sustainable agriculture that refugee folks in the U.S. are engaging in, and how specifically on the agricultural viability component of this. So these folks, often women, are growing food and are developing small businesses around it. So not only are they doing a service to people by growing food in a food that's culturally appropriate for their communities, but also they're starting businesses that are helping them to support their families and our economy. So in summary, I just feel very blessed. I feel blessed that my family sacrificed to send me to a place like Dickinson College. And I feel I draw on the support that I've had here, even in my daily work now. I hope that this serves as some small example of what your students probably are already benefiting from, or what they could benefit from with an agricultural project at your school. I think it can afford students a lot of advantages as they leave the liberal arts institution and head into the working world, both within academic work and beyond the academy. I certainly am thankful for the opportunities that I've been afforded and for the hard work that people like you are doing. So, and with an attitude of gratitude, thank you for listening and for your time.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you for taking the time to come back and visit us. I think the reason that a lot of us do what we do in agriculture is because of the community, and it's inspiring to meet a member of our community and hear from you, someone who's doing, you know, the things that we talk about all the time out in the world. So thank you very much. My name is Daniel Grover. I'm a senior here, and I'm a student worker at the farm. And I have a couple of announcements. We're going to be transitioning into the hoedown portion of the evening. So we need a couple of minutes to set up in here. So we're going to open the poster session back up, as well as having tours of sustainability on our campus that are going to be led by Neil Leary and Lindsay Lyons. There's Neil. And there's Lindsay. So those are going to be leaving from the main doors of the hub in about 10 minutes. As well as that, if you are camping on the farm and have any questions, Matt is the person to talk to. And he's going to be heading back to the farm around 9, so grab him now. And in the morning, we look forward to seeing you back here. We have breakfast starting at 7:30, and the session started at 8:45. Breakfast is in this room. And yeah, so enjoy the hoedown, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.